Extant, the British-based performing arts company run by and for visually impaired people, providing a performance space for inclusive theatre for everyone, will be staging the premiere of States of Mind on Saturday the 16th of October at 8:30pm as part of this year's Bloomsbury Festival. I'm now joined here on RNIB Connect Radio by Christopher Hunter, the director and writer behind States of Mind. Hello, Christopher, and welcome to Connect Radio.
Hello, Toby. Thank you for having me.
Firstly, before we talk about the premiere of States of Mind, Christopher, could you give us a bit of background to yourself on how you got into directing theatre and writing as a visually impaired person?
Well, I started off as an actor, and when I started off, I wasn't visually impaired. My mother had inherited retinitis pigmentosa, and I was like 10 years into my career as an actor when I discovered that I had the beginnings of retinitis pigmentosa. And I think it was my first season at Stratford with the RSC. And I noticed, like, heading off very brightly lit stages, the rest of the cast would sort of whiz off into the wings and backstage. And I'd sort of head off stage and go into the wings and go, "Ooh, I'm just going to take it a bit easy now." So then I started seeing people at Moorfields, and it was a condition that was under control for quite a while. So I was an actor, and actually I've started directing mostly in drama schools, and that's where most of my directing is done, which I love doing very much. In fact, over the past 4 years, 5 years, actually, it's been the majority of my creative work has been in drama schools, mostly the Manchester School of Theatre.
And in States of Mind, you've taken what I think is a very successful Shakespeare poem and turned it into this new production.
Yes.
How have you taken this poem and turned it into States of Mind?
Well, interestingly, I actually came across the poem a few years ago. And what struck me first about the poem was just how dramatic it was. And then I did a lot of research around it, and I found out that Shakespeare was very, very young when he wrote it, and he just come to London as a playwright and had only written about two or three plays. And the plague hit London, I think in 1592, and it was a very severe outbreak which closed all London theatres for over a year, and it led to no income for a budding playwright. So he turned his hand to writing this poem, and it became the best seller of the day. I mean, it's like really famous poem. It was his first published work, and it became the piece for which he was famous. So like if you were in Tudor England and you'd said, "Oh, I just bumped into Will Shakespeare at the Boar's Head," they wouldn't have gone, "What, the author of Hamlet?" They'd have gone, "What, the author of Venus and Adonis?" So it is quite an extraordinary poem. And I mean, what struck me initially was how dramatic it was, because it's a poem that's written by a playwright, not a poet as such. And I wanted to see if this poem could be delivered by an actor as if an actor could do it and approach it the same way as if they were speaking Hamlet or playing the role of Hamlet, like inhabit the poem, as opposed to say, "Oh, here's this piece of poetry that someone else has written, and as an actor, I'll be the conduit between the written word on the page and transfer those to words that go into your ear. But I'm going to exclude myself from the transaction. It's just going to be my voice with the meaning."
And you have cast Gillian Dean and Robin Paley-York in States of Mind. Why did you choose them, and what have they been able to bring to the production?
Well, I mean, first, I've been involved with Extant, just doing workshops and stuff with them for a number of years now. And actually, I've always thought that Shakespeare would be a great writer for Extant. For me, he's one of the most visual of dramatists. So I was so keen, and I sent this script to Maria Shoddy, who's the artistic director of Extant during lockdown, and she was keen to do it and committed to do it. And we auditioned in August. And I mean, Robin, I talked to, and basically he just did a wonderful audition. He did a lovely speech from Richard II, and I knew he'd be absolutely right to play the boy, which is the name of his character. And Gillian, actually, I had a wonderful actress cast, but she lived in Manchester, and it turned out that she wasn't able to come to London. So we had a week to go before rehearsal started, and no one to play the woman. Maria passed Gillian's name on to me, and I basically, which I've never done, looked at her showreel, and I cast from her showreel. It was a brilliant showreel. She had some theatre work on it and some television work on it, and I knew she could do it. And both of them are really wonderful actors, and it's a very difficult piece to do. I mean, not only are you dealing with verse, which is a strange language to us, and I'm a great believer in verse. I love Shakespeare's work, but there is a way that it has to be spoken, and you have to approach it in a certain way. And they are responding to it brilliantly. And the main reason for doing it was to make the language of this poem live.
Like with many extant productions, audio description is integrated into the performance, making it accessible for everyone. What do you think sighted audience members will get from the audio description as you have set the production in a medical observation room?
Now, I was very keen on having the audio description integrated into this. I didn't see why extant, you know, Company for Visually Impaired Artists should put on a show and the visually impaired members of the audience should have an earpiece. So what I've done, it's still in process, but the audio describers, they might be recorded or they might be live. I haven't decided on that yet. And what I'm doing is I'm making the audio description active in the sense that the audio describers are actors and they have a skin in the game. So they have characters themselves. So the idea at the moment is that the play takes place in an observation room and the audio describers are scientists, stroke doctors, who are helping conduct the audience through this observation. So they control the lights in the room. They say, okay, I think we will now change the, let's start with daylight. And they start with daylight. I think we've had enough of daylight. Now let's turn the lights to night. And they turn the lights to night. So in a way, the two characters are like experimental mice in a cage, as it were, who are being put through their paces. So the description in that sense is live.
And finally, if any visually impaired person listening now would like to find out more about extant or opportunities for visually impaired people to get into theatre and performing arts, whether that's on stage or backstage, where can they go to find out more?
Well, I think going to extant is one thing you can do, but there is no harm in going to the top schools. I mean, set your sights high. If you want to be an actor, then do your research, find out which drama school you would like to go to, and apply to them. The fact that you are visually impaired should not be a hindrance to you doing it. And, you know, you will be taken on your acting ability just as anyone else is. If you want to do technical work, then, you know, drama schools have technical departments. Not all of them, but Lambda do, RADA certainly does. And there are technical courses all around the place if you want to become a recording artist. Goldsmiths University has a wonderful radio media course. Yeah, there are some fantastic courses around. So, you know, apply to them. Visual impairment should not be any hindrance whatsoever. And I think today, if there were barriers to visually impaired people entering into these professions, I think those barriers are slowly being dismantled. So yeah, reach for the top.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Christopher Hunter, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much, Toby.